Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. While a woman failed to become president this week, the attempt was further evidence of the evolution of women's role in today's world. That role includes successful women as change agents and of accomplishment. We'll be talking about that evolution and a local attempt to document its impact. Joining me in studio is Blanche Tuhill, Chancellor Emerita of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Working with the State Historical Society of Missouri-St. Louis, Dr. Tuhill has conducted scores of interviews with influential, accomplished, and remarkable women about their success and their lives. Blanche Tuhill, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here.
Let's begin at the beginning. Why is it important to document the lives of these women?
Well, my academic interest, is history. And when I was in high school, I began to read Bruce Catton. And Bruce Catton always quoted the letters of the Civil War soldiers. And then when women wrote their published their diaries when they went to settle Kansas, I read those diaries and I learned what the women had done in order to help settle that state. So I've always been intrigued by leaving a record of accomplishment, of change. And when I retired from the University of Missouri-St. Louis, I wrote a book on the 50 years of the history of the campus in photographs, and I began to work with the State Historical Society on the St. Louis campus, and I'd always wanted to record the stories of women who went through this gigantic period of change between the end of World War II and really today. And I asked the current director, Zelli Fischetti, would he work with me on this project, and he said he would be delighted to. So I started out, I got a grant, and I began to interview these women. And it's just a collection of women's stories. They're in the State Historical Society. They're in there in perpetuity. They're a matter of the public record. Anybody can go and read them. And I did it because I wanted to leave a record, just as Bruce Catton read the letters of the Civil War soldiers and I read the letters of the women who settled Kansas. I want some scholar in some future time to read all these letters and figure out how change occurred and what these women did to make the American society better.
My understanding is that we're talking about 150 women at this point. Is that number finite, or is it going to grow, or how is that going
to
work?
No, we're up to 200 now.
Are you really?
We're closing in on 200. I have two other of my previous colleagues at the University of Missouri-St. Louis working with me. We take these interviews 2 days a week, on Tuesday and Friday. We have a videographer hired by the state of the State Historical Society who works with us. So we're going to go as long as I can get grants. So once I don't get grants, we might have to charge. But basically, I've been rather fortunate in getting grants.
How specifically do you select these women? What are the criteria?
Well, the first two groups were members of women's clubs. The first was a group of 72 women who belonged to the International Women's Forum. And they had 68 of their members sign up to be interviewed. They are mainly women who run organizations or who are the vice presidents of organizations. And then I got a grant from the Zonta Professional Women's Group, and they're interested in philanthropy and they're interested in overseas connections. And they gave me a grant, and only 40 of their women wanted to be interviewed. So the rest of the money was available for other people. And basically, I look for women who have an interesting story. And
well, this would have been a far different project if you had attempted it right after World War II or in the decade or so after that, wouldn't it?
Well, I think it would be because, you know, I was born in the 30s, and I remember a world where when I went to school, all of the workers were men, the policeman, the postman, sure. The bus driver, the the teachers were women, but the men were generally the principals or the assistant principals. Even the movie house, you might have bought your ticket to get in from a woman, but the inside of the movie house was filled with men and as workers. And so I personally then lived through World War II, saw women go to work in World War II that had stayed home and been housewives. When I was going to college, there were only a few jobs outside the home that women really aspired to, namely teaching, nursing, librarian, secretary, housewife. That was sort of it. And so I watched it. And today, I sit with women who run the Missouri Historical Society, who were vice presidents of Southwestern Bell and AT&T, women who run Laclede Gas. I've been on boards that run big organizations with other women. It's a change that I feel very deeply, but I'm sure other women don't realize the progression of that those steps.
Yeah. Of course, this week we saw a woman of accomplishment.
Yes.
Not quite reach that final objective,
yes,
which was the White House.
Yes.
I'm sure some of the things that you've learned from talking to other women went through your mind as you watched that process unfold.
I did. I think it's a very difficult office to aspire to because you have to have outside money and you have to have outside power. And in other countries where the women have become heads of state, they come up through a parliamentary system where they have worked with their male colleagues for years and cooperated and worked in a political fashion. So it's not as unusual to choose a woman leader because they know what they're getting. But in the American system, the presidency is a little different to say I'm going to be president of the United States. But I have faith that it will come. Just like the ERA didn't pass as a constitutional amendment. But in the long run, all the things that were in the ERA have come slowly.
Sure. Well, we do tend to move slowly on a lot of things. Not everything, but and these social changes and sociological changes, progress does come at a slower pace.
Let me say, I think the men have changed as well. I think in my era of the 30s, I don't think men pushed baby carriages. They might have carried the child in their arms if the mother carried a child in their arms. But the men didn't do the dishes. They didn't do the shopping. There were roles that people played, and those roles have now changed.
It's interesting you mentioned pushing baby carriages. Just as an aside, I was walking in Forest Park the other morning, and I was passed by a man pushing a baby carriage with a handsome child in that carriage. That man is going to be the next governor of Missouri. It was Eric Greitens.
Isn't that wonderful?
And he was doing, you know, what so many fathers are doing these days.
Yes, and I don't think they realize the change. Mm. I think that's history proceeds sort of slowly, and we as Americans, we don't look back very much until some scholar comes along and calls it to our attention.
Well, hello, scholar, and thank you for a job. Well, we're not going to recognize the names of all of the women, the 200 or so and more that you're chronicling here, are we? I mean, many of them are well-known, but not all of them are.
No, that's right. No. I've gotten a broad spectrum, and I hope to get even a broader spectrum. And people say to me, when will this end? Well, it will end when I run out of money.
Money's always at the root of everything.
Yeah.
Give us a sense of some of the women that people would recognize, however, that you have interviewed.
Well, I've interviewed Maxine Clark, who was Build-A-Bear.
Sure.
I've interviewed Fran Levin, who runs the Missouri Historical Society. I've interviewed Debbie Hollingsworth, who was the vice president for outreach and community service, PR and politics with both Southwestern Bell and AT&T. I've interviewed a lot of high-powered judges, Ann Covington, Susan Block.
I've read several of them. There are a couple of dozen, 44 or so,
yes,
posted online. That we'll put a link to that, by the way, that people
good
can read.
Good.
They're fascinating reads because they really give you an insight into women that you might have heard about and read about, but it's additional information that you wouldn't know otherwise.
Oh, it's absolutely. You know, we ask the same questions of everyone, and then we have a conversation. And what I've learned is that every story is different. But there are several things that are sort of uniform. One is most of these women have had encouragement from their home, and most of them have had encouragement from outside the home. Mm-hmm. So I've decided maybe there's something to that. So I would say to the parents today, encourage your child to be what they want to be. And I would say to people in their offices, if you see someone who deserves to move up and has ability, encourage them to do so.
Are there other dots that connect these women that you've spoken to aside from these two factors you've just mentioned?
Yes, they all have a theme in their life. Uh-huh. And some of the themes would be natural. My theme is I've always thought of education as being one of the pillars of the American mm-hmm. society. So I've always wanted to be involved in education, particularly public education. But there are women who really want to be nurturers, and these are professional women, but they view themselves as a nurturer not only in their family setting but in their work setting. They all know why they go to work. They all know what makes them get up and go.
You know, you mentioned nurturing, and I hear that mentioned so often with regard to women in politics and why women should have leadership positions, because that's a quality that men don't necessarily have, and it's an important one in today's world.
Yes, yes, yes.
All right.
But it was a surprise to me when they said to me, well, my theme is a nurturer, and I thought, well, I thought of it only as women with children, mm-hmm. but it wasn't. It was in the life of the day, to be kind, to be generous, to look for people's good in them.
You know, you mentioned education. One of those, and I have not obviously read them all. There are just too many to read in a period of a couple of days. But one that I did read was of Frankie Freeman.
Oh, yes.
And, you talk about the history. Here's a woman who's such a part of history, and education and the role that played in her life. Her mother was an educator, as I recall.
Yeah.
So that was...
Well, Frankie's basis of her life, I think, is from her family. Her family's goal was to work to have equality for all the citizens in the United States. And I think that was part of her growing up, and I think that was part of her going to school and education, and her work life was that... move toward equality. And in her interview, she talks about when President Johnson came to town and wanted to meet her. He was here for a political speech, but he was about to appoint her as the first woman on the Civil Rights Commission. And he called to her and said, can you come to the Chase Hotel, I think it was, and she and her husband went, and then they were going through the various approvals, and it came to the point where she had to go by herself. So she said to her husband, I will be back in a half hour just, and they escorted her in to meet the president.
Not too many years before that period of time at the Chase Hotel, African Americans were not allowed in the Chase Hotel unless they were working in janitorial jobs or waitress or what have you.
And that's what's so interesting about these lies. We forget those days.
Yeah.
And history is really there to remind us all that we've come a long way and we're a better society for having include. I think the women's movement was really, the goal of it was to allow women who could contribute to the American society in different ways than the four or five that I outlined to take part in that society, to be useful to that society. And that comes up again and again and again.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Blanche Toohill. You'll remember her certainly as the former chancellor at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. It's been, 12 or 13, 14 years,
yes,
I guess, since you left that job. But she's involved in a project now that we're talking about in which she's interviewing a number of women here in our area, in our region, who have been successful at one thing or another, mm-hmm. and she's cataloging this information for historical reference down the line. We'll come back and continue the conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation with Blanche Tuhill about her project in which she is interviewing a large number of women here in this region, cataloging their histories so that that can be used as a reference point for people who want to review that history in the days and years ahead. Dr. Tuhill, you mentioned during the break that and earlier in the program you had said that it was so important to have support, to have family, friends encourage women to move along and follow their dreams and their aspirations. But not everyone had that, not everyone you talked to.
No, I would say about out of 200 interviews, we've had about five that the women say their families did not encourage them. The goal was to be married and to have children and to stay home. But the goal also was to be involved in nonprofit activities. So I talked to a woman the other day who really did not feel confident of herself until she was about 50. And at that point, her husband was dead, her children were raised, and she had been all these years active in nonprofit management. And she ran for public office because they knew that she knew mm-hmm. everybody in the community. And I guess that was encouragement. So people in the community came to her and said, you can be in this political office. And she said, oh, no, not me. And they said, yes, you know everybody here. And she ran, and she was a huge success politically and is now very active in all kinds of philanthropic activities. So there are all kinds of ways to really fulfill what you feel that you can, to make that contribution, that prior to that time she was always hesitant to push herself forward.
Did you know and have you known these women before doing the interviews? Certainly some of them, but did you know them all or did you become acquainted with them for the first time?
I probably knew 50% of them, but the other 50 walked in and we just sat down and I didn't know exactly what their story was, but I asked the seven questions and I got to know them during the interview process.
Yeah, because they're very detailed and in many cases very, very personal.
Oh, yes. Honest.
Honest.
They're very
yeah.
honest.
Well, one thing I did notice is the fact that they do have the right to edit that material.
Well, they have the right to take something out. Uh-huh. They don't have the right to put anything in. Mm-hmm. And they also have the right to say, I don't want to do this at all, in uh-huh. which place time we just give them back the tape. But we've only had one person say after they did the taping that they didn't want it. We've had a few people take out a phrase or a sentence. Mm-hmm. But basically people have held to it, and then we make the transcript. So in their file, we will have the disc, which is the video, and we'll have the transcript. And then they have a right to put anything else in it that they want to. So if they've got more information or they've written something or they have a letter. I have a letter of one woman who went to Northwestern University for undergraduate in the College of Business. And she applied for the MBA and she gave me a letter for her file which says Northwestern University doesn't take women in the MBA mm-hmm. program.
Right. Times have changed. Now there are more women in colleges than men.
Yes, there are.
Which you would know very well.
Yes.
What about the role of men in their lives? Is there a common thread there? You mentioned support before, so I'm certain that is there in the vast, vast majority of cases. What about other influence of men in their lives?
Well, I think I find that a lot of fathers have urged their daughters to do what they want to do. And I had one case just the other day. She wanted to be a social worker, and her father said, no, no, you'll be a wonderful lawyer. And so they made the deal that she could go to law school for 1 year, and at the end of that, if she didn't like it, he would pay for her to go to social work. On the other hand, I have a contemporary of mine whose father was a lawyer and a judge, and he laughed at her when she said she wanted to be a lawyer. He said, you can be a nurse, a teacher, a librarian,
or the usual
things. But she's my age. And but I think that husbands today who are married to these women that run organizations, you have to help the spouse. Just as the spouse helped the man has to help the spouse. Mm-hmm. And especially if you have children. Mm-hmm. And it is you get into the sandwich generation where they're taking care of the elderly members of the family, sure, and they have children. So it has to be, one woman referred to it as a partnership. There has to be a partnership.
Well, what is the age range of the women that you've interviewed?
Well, the youngest I've done is about 25. I did the two daughters of a woman who runs Gray Bar. And so they're in their mid-20s, and they're all ready to take professional jobs. And the other one, the latest was, well, Frankie Freeman's just past 100. So it's a wide spectrum. And because of that, you get different stories, because there are opportunities at some time that don't exist at others.
Sure. And of course, the time in which they are growing is different. I mean, we mentioned,
yes,
just after World War II, that's a totally different era, as we've already discussed. You mentioned that you have a list of seven questions,
yes,
that you start with. I gather that's just kind of a baseline to get everybody off on the same footing. Is that why you do it that way?
Yes. Well, I think researchers like to have a body of the same kinds of questions so that they can draw conclusions. But it's more of a conversation. So I'll say to them, talk about your family life. And one question I ask is, did you play with dolls? Did you play with boys and girls both? Mm-hmm. And did you play in a free way that you could just go out into the neighborhood and drive your bike and not worry about being home until dinner, till your mother called or your father called that dinner was served? And I haven't yet found the generation that really had a very restricted life after school. These two girls had somewhat. They took dancing on Monday and music on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But they had a father who had a very flexible schedule, and he could basically be there when they came home.
I'll bet you the 25-year-old did not tell stories of going out on the bike and being out all day, because
that's right.
That times have changed so much.
Yes, but I wanted to make a record of that.
Yeah.
And that's one of the questions that I ask. How did you play when you were young?
I'm guessing you probably wouldn't want to mention any names, but was there something that just kind of blew your mind that you heard that you maybe didn't expect, or some,
yes,
inspirational story that,
yes,
you can share?
Yes. I'll say it. I'll say the name, Maxine Clark. Mm-hmm. Maxine Clark's mother was involved in the march of Dr. Martin Luther King in, mm-hmm, Selma. And Maxine, as a teenager, got on the bus to go from Florida to Selma, Alabama, to be in the, mm-hmm, march. And they got arrested. But they were immediately let out. So, I mean, you just are stunned when you hear somebody in a historical period is involved in the buses. I mean, I remember that because I was, sure, teaching on the East Coast at that time, and that was all over the news. And now I know a 14-year-old girl who was riding the bus with her mother.
Maxine Clark is such a petite woman,
yes,
you know, but she's not afraid to roll up her sleeves and get involved in anything. And
no,
I guess,
no.
I guess this is further indication.
Yes, that her mother was one of these people, and yeah, she followed her mother. She also told a wonderful story about when she was in high school, a teacher recognized her ability to write, and she got her a scholarship to go to college. Now, wasn't that wonderful that a teacher intervened in her life and made certain that she went to college?
Was it easy to see in gathering this data that these women would be successful early on? Were the things they told you about their early lives that made it clear that they were going to be successful?
No, I don't think so.
No.
I think you're successful partially because you do make decisions. You do choose pathways. But I think whether you make it to the very top is due to a lot of other there's only one woman I know, the woman that Catherine Manzarella, who runs Gray Bar, and she said when she was not a college graduate when she went to work for Gray Bar. She was a secretary, but she said in the interview, someday I'm going to be the president of this organization. Uh-huh. So she's somebody. She went to college while she was a secretary and got her credentials, and then slowly she said she always took a job that was new and different and that was exciting. She knew that it was reckless in one way, that she might fail, but she felt that that was a path upward.
I see. I just want to be clear on one thing. Do you recruit these women yourself, or do they offer themselves to you to be interviewed?
Well, in the case of the first two, the International Women's Forum, they made a conscious decision that they wanted their people to be interviewed. Uh-huh. So somebody in the organization called them up and said, your date is next Tuesday at, you know, uh-huh, 3. The Zonta organization just made the offer to their people, and about 40 of them stepped forward. So that freed up other money, and I talked to people, and I say, you know, something about them, and they start telling me their story, and I say, well, would you like to be interviewed? But we've publicized this, so people can volunteer to come. They just call the State Historical Society at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. And can I give that number?
Yes. Yeah. Give the number, and we'll put it on our website,
okay,
as well.
It's 516-5119, and you ask for Josie, but she only works on Tuesday and Friday.
Okay. Well, we'll put all of that information on the
good
website. People are driving right now probably and don't have an opportunity
to write that down. Yeah.
We have a question here from Colleen, and I'm sure it's Colleen Starkloff, who's been heavily involved with the disability rights movement. Are you interviewing women who have been involved in the disability rights movement?
I'm going to say I think we've been involved in women who have served on committees, but I don't think they have been as active as she has been, and we would love to interview Colleen.
All right.
I did know her husband, Max.
Yes,
yes,
as we all did.
Yes.
That's quite a family.
And I've met Colleen.
Yeah, an inspirational couple.
And
if
she
ever
makes,
there was one.
She makes a wonderful point that that the broader the group of women, the better off we'll all be.
Right. I want to point out that you're going to be talking more about this on Monday at 10 o'clock, in the a.m., that is, obviously, at the Missouri History Museum. Maryville University presents A Conversation with Blanche Truhill, Monday at 10 at the History Museum. A lot of tweets have come in of ideas for people for you to interview. I'll read them to you just to get an indication of the range. Kay Dry, who is an environmentalist. Lyda Crewson, who is running for mayor of the city of St. Louis. Jennifer Joyce, outgoing as the prosecutor in the city.
I've done Jennifer.
You have? Okay. Well, that's done. We can strike that off this list. Robin Smith, who is just unsuccessful in her campaign for Secretary
of State. I've talked to Robin.
Haven't really? I'll bet she
She's to come in. She hasn't come in
yet. Yeah, I worked with her for years. She'll be an interesting conversation. And Katie Collier of Katie's Pizza and Pasta.
I'd love to do that.
You know, I happen to know her, and she's got quite a story. She's done very, very well as a young entrepreneur and would fit that lower age range qualification for you.
You know, I've done two women that work at the Tower Grove Market. One is a refugee as a child from Cuba who sells beans at the Tower Grove Market, and another woman who makes scones. She's English. She immigrated too. So I'm looking for a wide group of women.
Right. Well, I'm sure you're going to get them, and you already have a pretty good running start on this thing with about 200 of them so far. Blanche Duell, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on this project. I know it's close to your heart. It's keeping you busy, and you're doing what you love to do, collecting history.
Thank you so much.
Again, a reminder that you'll be taking part in that event at the Missouri History Museum at 10 o'clock on Monday, a conversation with Blanche Duell. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.